Welcome back to the Coach's Corner podcast. It is Brian, Coach Mo, and Stewie. Stewie's taking a nap on the couch, so you might be hearing from him a little bit later on. Hopefully, you guys had a good Thanksgiving. You were able to, if you weren't able to go out and be with friends and family, you were at least able to. You were at least able to get the opportunity to hang out with. Those in your immediate family. So, we're coming back off of a break, and so we're raring to go. On today's episode, we're going to talk, I guess we'll call this, what do you think, pandemic prep training?
Pandemic prep training.
And I know we're a year into the pandemic, but I do think that that's something that we do, that probably we need to discuss. So, and it's basically telling you how to prep and what equipment you need to do some training remotely. So that's what we got on today's episode. Thanks for tuning in, and we will get to you guys after the intro. Peace. All right, we're back. So in the news, we got a couple of things we want to discuss, what's going on, and then maybe do a little bit of housekeeping regarding our products and services, and then we're going to jump into our topic. So, in the news, everything's shutting down. I think, and I've mentioned this time and time again, when you're, Nebraska is kind of its own thing. It's its own state, but understand how this thing works. Whatever's happening on the coast eventually reaches us. And it looks like they're closing up shop in California. And I don't think to be honest with you, it's not a choice. It's more, that's what they have to do. Regardless of what you may believe or what you don't believe, the virus is going to remove your options. And I think California ran headlong into that. And we're going to see other states following suit. So the reason why we're doing this episode is so that you have the tools to, get the maximum outcomes for your athletes at home. Because that's going to be at least until we can get, stuff rolled out and start getting back to life here. You got to make preparations for home. And I think, be honest with you, everybody, we opened back up this summer just because I think everybody was getting kind of antsy sitting around the house. And so we opened all the way back up in summer. And so now we're kind of reaping the harvest of that. Would you say that?
Yeah, it looks like we all kind of jumped the gun a little bit. And it's starting over, but I think we can be prepared this time, especially in our field.
So that's what I don't know I could be totally wrong on this one. But I do think that the smart people, the ones that are paying attention and want to keep the edge, are figuring out ways to get the same kind of work from a distance. So that's what this episode's about. Preparation's everything, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Especially in the athletic world, you prep for everything. And prep can be as simple as, laying your clothes out the night before a sporting event, up to having the right training for that sporting event. So there's a lot of different dynamics and levels to preparation.
And speaking of having the right training, we need to talk about the fight. Roy Jones and Mike Tyson went out there and did what they did. They look good for guys, that have, Roy's been fighting here and there, but Tyson's been out of the boxing game for a while. And he looked to come in. He came in superior shape, better than I've seen him in years. And Roy came in as Roy, because Roy's been fighting, I think that they took the prep work seriously. And I know the jokes are floating around how Roy kind of came out looking lethargic and stuff. That's always been kind of Roy's demeanor. He didn't come out, it is what it is. Now let's talk about Nate.
Oh boy.
And Coach Mo's a Knicks fan, so this stings a little bit more. When we talk about preparation, we need to kind of look and see what, let's unpack the name. We're gonna move away from the jokes a little bit. I mean, of course. But let's talk brass tacks here. One of the things I noticed when I was watching the fight is one of the announcers mentioned this. You don't play with boxing. You don't play boxing. You cannot come in with no experience and go fight an experienced fighter and expect to win. It's just not going to happen. You know, your ability, you know, your athletic ability, you know, Nate might have put up a better fight than somebody who's completely detrained. But an out of shape boxer who's been trained professionally, Boop just might be out of shape, will probably fare better against, was it Jake Paul or whoever? He fared better against Jake Paul because Jake Paul is a trained boxer. I mean, let's be real here. Nate Robinson stepped into the ring and fought a trained boxer. And I said it that night, like his team kind of let him down there because in my mind, I knew that there wasn't a chance that he was going to win. He's going in and fighting somebody who's been training in that specific sport for a couple of years. Now, yeah, YouTube personality, har, 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 you know, he has his own little controversy swirling around him. But the reality is the dude's a trained boxer. And so we saw what happens. Even athletes can't overcome a lack of specific training for what they're trying to do, right?
Yeah, it's again, everybody's, you know, making the jokes and things there, but in any sport, you have to be prepared. Boxing, I'm a person that grew up boxing, doing martial arts most of my life, and you can even tell in the first few minutes he was out of place. Yeah. You know, he's out of place, and it's a sport where not only, yeah, he got knocked out. Yeah, that happened. Well, there'd be permanent damage from that. You know, the permanent damage from that and he's just lucky that's the only thing that happened. This is not a sport you play with. It's kind of like people waiting too late to play football. And you hear these people that, you know, I can go out there and they're their armchair quarterback and I can throw more than so-and-so. And it's like, if you walked on an NFL field at 32... untrained and never taken a hit, and you come across the middle, and Dominican Sue ends up hitting you, you'll never walk again.
Right.
I mean, because you're not trained to do this. It's not what you do.
And if you don't get that guaranteed money, you'll be doing it for free.
Right.
You'll go through a debilitating injury and never walk again for free.
Right.
And so that's kind of where we're going with this, guys. You know, Nate didn't get hit with a lucky punch.
No.
And I'm sitting there looking at the ref like it should have been stopped the first time he got dropped because that was bad. That would have been a good stoppage. They kind of waited too long, letting him get all the way back up and get his bearings and all the other stuff instead of erring on the side of safety because you have somebody that hasn't boxed on that level before. And I'm not saying Nate Robinson hasn't been in the gym and he hasn't sparred with people and stuff like that. That's not what we're talking about. I think it's more or less, before I get into it, you might be hearing from Stewie in a second here. but we're talking about, you know, in a professional context with professional trainers and people that train boxing for a living. I don't think that he has it. And even if he has it, it's not on the depth, apparently, of a guy that also outweighs him. So I don't want to give a bunch of excuses for Nate. He went out there and he did what he did. And he took his chances. And sometimes it doesn't work out. You know, it sounds like he felt good about the fight. And he just accepted the fact that he lost. But the reality is, I don't think... the way I put it is, he got fed to him. He got fed to Jake.
I think that's an important lesson for, you know, any athlete, as you know, we're going into the preparation piece of it is, do you want to step on the court? Do you want to step on the field? Do you want to step in the ring without having proper training or being ready? And what I mean by proper training, because people are like, oh, he was training for boxing. He's training for boxing. I'm like, yeah, a few months does not eliminate somebody who's been training for a few years.
Yeah.
That's a huge difference.
And we're talking about, because like you can move, you could feasibly, like Conor McGregor did, you can feasibly go from boxing to MMA and back. Because reality is, I'm probably going to get some fight heads mad at me. But statistically, when you look at the numbers, the most used martial arts in MMA is going to be wrestling, your grappling arts, and boxing. Those are the disciplines people use the most. And then, yeah, I could even pull up the chart because it kind of lays it out, like which discipline has the most belts. But boxing has created a lot of MMA wins because it's probably the most efficient strike. A punch in the face is a punch in the jaw, a body blow. Those are efficient kind of strikes. They're more efficient than these fancy kicks and all this other stuff, the highlight reel things. But what I'm saying is this: the skill set to move from MMA to boxing or boxing to MMA. And I'll be honest, there's a couple of MMA fighters that actually have professional boxing on their resume. I know Diaz, not Nate, Nick Diaz. Nate Diaz, yeah. Nick Diaz was a professional boxer. And so he has boxing on his resume. It's easier for him who has a comparable skill set to move back and forth between those two sports than for Nate Robinson, who has primarily done basketball. I know he played a little football at some level, I believe in high school or whatnot. The skill sets translate between sports.
I go back when Mike Tyson said it. It was funny that he fought at night. Like, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yep.
So his probably plan wasn't going there and out athleticize this person, but once you get hit, a lot of the time it goes right out the window.
Yeah, and people talk about he's going to use his speed and all this other stuff. The reality is Nate may have been faster, but I don't think he was a faster boxer.
Right.
He wasn't faster in a boxing context. He might have been more fleet of foot, but that's a different type of quickness, different type of skill set, and so that's what we saw.
Yeah, Crawford fought Amir Khan.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you had all these people who were like, well, Amir, he's one of the fastest puncher, ever. And had videos of him punching a can out the air and all this. And he got embarrassed. I mean, he got embarrassed because it didn't matter how fast you can punch. It's how efficient you are with your punches.
The can can't hit back. And, we're going to piss people off. I don't care. So if we go back into the days and look at old interviews with Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee openly talks about different philosophies that he used to build his martial art. He used fencing, but primarily watched American boxing for footwork. Why do you think he studied American boxing? Because when he sat down and looked at it in terms of effectiveness, boxing was highly, American style boxing is highly effective at doing what it does. And so they even asked him, and they always talk about float those dream matches out there. Muhammad Ali had it against Inoki, I believe. He had that exhibition match. And Inoki was like, I am not about to sit there and trade hands with Muhammad Ali. I'm going to leg kick him. And that probably shortened Muhammad Ali's career. But his people didn't clearly define the rules of the exhibition, because if they had, they would have said no strikes below the knees, and that might have been the end of that. That exhibition might have ended before it started. But anyway, long story short, reflecting on fighting, Bruce Lee fighting Muhammad Ali, he even laughed that off because it's a different skill set. Now, under rules that are favorable to Bruce, we might have a different kind of fight. But in a traditional boxing match, Ali had all the advantages, including, and I'm throwing this out there, including possibly even the speed advantage. Just because he's bigger doesn't mean he's slower. And when you're fighting somebody whose arms are as long as your legs, that can be a game changer. So anyway, all we're saying is this. Get the right training for what you're trying to do. And we saw a living example of that in that fight. Nate slept the sleep of kings. That was the sleep of kings in that match.
He got some good rest.
He got that kind of sleep that you can't get at home. That, airplane, I know I'm about to be interrupted kind of sleep. where your body knows that it's going to, it's probably going to be interrupted sleep, but it just tries to get as much as it possibly can. Like I said, he slept the sleep of kings, man. Kings, you hear me? You want that kind, you envy that kind of sleep that he got in that ring. And that's that, you know, I mean, we're going to get the jokes off because it was a knockout. And, you know, that's what you watch the sport. You watch the sport to see the footwork and to see people doing it in ring generalship and all that stuff. But the knockout is why a lot of fans tune in. And so Nate gave the fans what they were looking for, I guess.
Yeah, he took that L. He took that L. And I'm joking because I wouldn't have been in there.
No.
I would have known better.
Yeah, I'm not a trained boxer. I'm not gonna go fight one. Nope. I have no desire to go fight one. You got to know what your limitations are. Nate probably made his money. I know they were talking about the purse wasn't that big, but probably is getting a cut of sponsorships and stuff like that. Weed Maps was one of the sponsors, which I thought was hilarious. but you know, at the end of the day. The lesson was learned, and Nate got some good sleep. He got a full night's sleep in 30 seconds. So, you know, props to Nate for even having the stones to do that. But at the end of the day, jumping into he knew that he was fighting above his weight class in more than one way.
Yeah, and he's gonna go to sleep.
Right. So that's what we're saying. Train for what you're doing. Yes, we are advocates of multiple sports, and yes, we believe that skill sets translate across sports, but you also have to have some realism with what you're doing. Just because Travis Kelce is a fantastic tight end, and you know, and he might have played ball, I'm guessing he probably hooped, because a lot of tight ends hooped on some level. You know, even Tony Gonzalez had a difficult time cracking the NBA roster, getting serious time. So, you know, you practice for the sport you're in, but understand that improving your athleticism will maximize your gains regardless of what you're playing. That makes sense?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, with that, this episode is for the DIY coaches. The coaches that want to do it themselves at home, or that have to do it themselves because of pandemic considerations. So that's what we're going to jump headlong into. We're going to have some equipment that you probably need to get started. And we'll get to that after taking a pause for the calls. Talk to you in a few. All right. So we're back. Here's the thing. We know that this pandemic is affecting people in different manners. People are having different ways of coping with it. Some of our kids are in school face to face. Other kids are doing remote learning. Other kids are doing a hybrid model. Here's what we're forecasting. At some point in time, and we're talking locally, but it may apply to your state. At some point in time, we're going to have to scale back. We're going to pull everything back. You know, and that's just the reality of what we're facing. We're going to pull everything back. And so we want to give the parents out there an opportunity. And it's not, you know, we have our thing that we were talking about, in terms of our virtual coaching thing that's still available. And we are in the process of testing it out with a small group of athletes to roll it out so that we can make sure that, we get a lot of the bugs worked out of it. But, that's not what we're here to try to push you towards. It's a solution we're offering, but we want to give you some actionable things that you can do to be the DIY coach, the DIY trainer, and train at home. And here's the thing. Sometimes good enough is good enough. And that's kind of where we're at right now. We want to give you enough to be good enough to train to keep whatever advantage you have over the competition intact. All right. So we're going to throw out some equipment and things like that. So Coach Mo, from an investment standpoint, and when I'm talking about investment, it's basically investing in being successful with this at-home training thing. How much of an equipment investment, and just you can just throw a number off the top of your head, how much of an investment does it take to get the equipment that people need to be the DIY coach?
Well, it depends on what you're looking for. It doesn't take a lot, depending on what you're trying to go for. I mean, We can go into the specifics. We're looking at, you know, getting cones. If you want to dribble, you practice dribbling, getting a jump rope, couple things like that, a couple ladder runs. So you're looking at an investment of, you can probably get that stuff under $100.
Okay.
So it won't break you to get that stuff if, especially if you know you're going to be, you know, in the house for a while.
So we're talking about, you know, $100 or less can get you enough to get you what you need. All right. So, Coach Mo, if you're talking to me as a parent who's looking to do the coaching thing from home, right? What's the first thing that you would suggest I get?
First thing you want to get, well, first you got to make sure that you have an area that you can do the training in. And so, you know, making sure that you, as a parent, if you're married, for me, I discuss with my wife, like, hey, you know, the kids are going to be probably dribbling in the basement or right. The garage or, you know, so make sure before you get this big plan of I'm going to start training, that you have that spot first. And there's a discussion with everybody's rules are set on where and how you're going to do it. So I can turn into something bad.
Yep. So essentially what we're saying is make sure that the area is free of Hot Wheels and Legos so that you don't catch that debilitating Lego to foot injury that every parent here has faced in the past, where you step on the Lego and it sends a shockwave of paralyzing pain. It's almost like a liver punch where it freezes your body and stops your bodily functions for a second.
What's worse, the Lego step or the edge of the bed, like, ankle tap?
Edge of the bed ankle tap draws blood. And so I've experienced that. And I'd rather step on a Lego because it's less of a mess to clean up afterwards. So, but sometimes you get that Lego just right, and you might puncture something. Then you might have to go to the hospital.
There's a lot of choice words you might say in front of your kids. Yeah. And it's okay. They got to grow up one day. It's yep. good. It comes from you.
Get it over. Just get it.
Not anybody else.
Just get it over with. So anyway, so the first thing is you need a space that's free of things where you're going to hurt yourself, is what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So you got your space, and hopefully the space is free, more or less, because it's a space that you own that's in your home. Okay, so space. Next, what we got next?
Next, you and this goes back to what we said every week, you're evaluating what the athlete that you have and evaluating what they need to do. One thing I would suggest is every kid in basketball, any kind of basketball, I don't care if it's first grade, I don't care if it's Y, select, high school, they gotta know how to dribble. So find, you got your area, and you gotta have a basketball. So the first equipment that you have to have is a basketball.
Basketball. So, how do you pick a basketball?
If you're under, I'm gonna talk for, this is all new to me, because I didn't know they had different sizes until I got older as a coach, but when I was growing up, we all had one size basketball. I didn't remember it being different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're 7th grade, if you're a boy, a male, 7th grade and below is 28.5. 28.5. And sometimes they go like a little preschool, they do 27.5. And if you're a male and you're 8th grade and above, it's 29.5. Females, I think it's just straight 28.5 the rest of their career. I'm almost sure it is the rest of their career. And so you pick it based off of that.
Okay. So you got to get the right size basketball. And here's the thing. If you have a kid that's kind of in between, you could probably, it's not going to hurt to buy two.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know. Because for me, I always suggested the kids go up a size if you're in between, because if you're able to shoot with a heavier basketball, it's going to be a lot easier when it is coming time to expand your level anyway.
All right. So we got the space. We got the basketball. What else?
So we have the space. We have the basketball. And let's talk about a plan before we add some other things. So a plan. So we have the space, the basketball, and let's say our main focus is going to be dribbling. So we sit down and we make a plan for that dribbling and make the plan realistic. If you know that kid wasn't practicing anything but twice a week anyway, to have him go 7 days a week 2 hours each and add all this extra stuff, it's gonna burn. I'm gonna be honest, it's gonna burn the athlete out. So that's something they're not used to. Have it kind of sit to the same schedule that you were doing practice wise already, and then add that in, and then add some different dribbling and those kind of things there, and we can go to specifics and you know on where you can get some of that stuff at and how you can obtain those kind of drills, but have a plan of what you're gonna do and how you're gonna use your time and before you start.
Yep. You know, one of the things that you can do as a somebody who's programmed for athletes or whatnot, and I know Coach Mo can attest to this, one of the things you need to be careful about specifically is going past, training past your goal, because that could end up, if you overshoot your goal, you can burn your athlete out really quick. So sit down and figure out where the limits are, figure out what your goals are and what your outcomes are and how far you want to go with the specific training. And then once you master that, then you go back to the drawing board and create something new.
Myself and Brian, before we got on the air, we just had a conversation about overtraining. For myself, we're both over 40 and we both lift weights and we've been doing it since college. And what you notice is that Father Time is undefeated. And so what things we used to do at 20, you can't do now. And I came, you know, we came in before the podcast and he said, I told him I was hurting, you know. And, you know, Brian gave me some tips and talked about, you know, like kind of, you know, reducing that workload. You're gonna get, you know, you're gonna reduce that workload before I get, you know, go in there and not overtraining your body, because that pain of, there's pain of, yeah, I got a good workout, it's that good, I feel the burn, and there's pain that I can't actually walk because I feel my knees gonna fall out of place because I went too heavy and I did too many reps at that weight. So it's just adjusting that stuff there, and that's a lifelong thing you'll be dealing with.
Yep. Repetition can, it can create fantastic results for you, but it also can reduce your shelf life, if you know what I mean. And so it's finding that sweet balance. If you are in pain, you got to dial your reps back. And you know, dial your rep backs, maybe increase the weight and get more effective time with less repetition. And that goes into the training we're putting together, you know, the training we put together. We do want the kids to get the reps in, but we do have to be cognizant of the fact that they're still kids. And so we're going to keep the reps down. So it's basically minimal effective complexity, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want it to be as uncomplex as it needs to be effective. And then as that becomes simpler and simpler, then you start adding a little bit more complexity and making it a little bit more extravagant, and doing a little bit more. But the mistake people can make really fast out the gate is trying to do too much too soon. And so that's why we say sit down and plan what your goal is. And then once you meet that goal, then you draw up another goal and you figure out how you're going to get there. You know, if you're on a road trip, the idea is at some point you're going to stop, right? Once you reach your destination, you're going to stop driving, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of people, when they train or when they plan, they never stop at their destination and they just keep going and going and going. And it may be great for you, but at some point your passengers are going to get a little bit irritated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're planning on driving to Texas and next thing you know, you're down in the tip of Chile, you've gone too far. And at some point your passengers are going to look at you and say, where are you going? I thought we were going to Texas. So that's what I'm saying. So be aware of where your destination, your endpoint is. And that's what the planning comes in. All right. So we got our space. We got our basketball. We have our plan. Now let's get into what else do we need?
And so I would suggest if you do have a space, you're able to dribble, you have everybody in there, I would suggest getting a pack of like cones, and everybody see the big colorful orange, yellow, green, whatever cones. And these cones can be found at a lot of places. You don't have to pay over $10 for a pack of cones. Like, yeah, I'd be shocked if you found some more than that. And these can be ordered offline. They can be at your local retail store, or whatever, you know. So they're there. Get a couple cones. Reason I say that, you always want to put yourself, you want to test yourself a little bit. So like, you want to give yourself some goals. And so a goal could be, I dribble around two of these cones with my right hand 50 times. And I do it with my left hand 50 times. So you have a goal, and once you complete the goal, it's done. It also gives you the boundaries. If you have a boundary, let's say mom and dad say you can only go in this part of the driveway, set your cones up, make sure all your drills are done, or whatever you came up with inside of that drill. So find that assistance. Now that you have that assistance, now that you have those things to start with, and you got a place to, you know, and you have an idea, it's now it's time to execute your plan.
Yep. And you got to execute your plan. And I'm just pulling up stuff off the top. I'm looking at different things online. You can get on Amazon, I'm not going to name drop any brand names, but you can get some of the stuff we're talking about, like an agility ladder. You can cop an agility ladder for $12.
Yep.
That's before taxes. Cones and hurdles and all the other stuff. Those things are not expensive. Now, they're not game breakers, but they do help. Because if you have a cone, you don't have to worry about the piece of paper that you put down on the ground blowing away. The cones, you can get cones, the agility cones that we got those for like, what, $10?
Oh, yeah.
And you get like 20 of them or something like that. And so this stuff doesn't cost a ton. It can help your training. It's not a necessary thing, but, sometimes you spend a little for the convenience of not having to chase a piece of paper around a driveway. Mm-hmm. And so, that allows you to do that. So, Coach Mo, back to what you were talking about.
Yeah, and so now we have it, it's simple. Like that, those cones can be for anything. You can add jump ropes, add a jump rope there, and so like let's give you an example. So like maybe I'm doing the dribbling piece, and I do a dribbling, and my plan is to dribble. I usually practice 3 days a week, so I'll keep the same times, keep the same routine, So Monday, I do crossover, right hand, left hand. Give yourself a goal to it. Yep, do a goal to it. Give, do some ball wraps. Give yourself something you know how to do. Maybe something you already do with your coach at practice. And if you're familiar with it, do it. If you're familiar with doing a certain dribbling drill, do it. Coach of freshman that... Bellevue West, and one thing he's always taught me and the rest of the kids is the rule of seven. And the rule of seven is if I repeat something seven times, it just starts sticking with me. Mm-hmm. And so, think about it, if I'm able to give myself seven sets of 30 dribbles with my right hand below my waist, eventually it's going to stick with me. And then I give my left hand the seven, there. My Tuesday... Maybe at school you have it off. Maybe you it's your rest day. But maybe on a Tuesday at school, you get on the bike and you do swimming with somebody too. So, okay, let's say you don't have access to a pool at the house, but that's not your off day yet. Because at school, you would have been still doing stuff. So maybe get on mom and dad's treadmill. Maybe get, if it's not so cold outside, maybe take a little jog around the block. Whatever you do, it may not be the same hour and a half, 2 hour practice you have at school, but have to do the same routine or try to get close to it. And if your off day was Wednesday, then make your off day Wednesday. Your off day Wednesday. So don't go so far where you're out of what you're used to, because you're not going to want to do it. Your body's not going to get used to it. You're not going to want to do it. And not every kid has the same work ethic.
Right.
Not saying that kid is bad. I mean, there's guys who made it to the NFL and the NBA with kind of low work ethic because they're just very talented. Mm-hmm. But you're not going to tell them to, hey, man, I'm going to need you to do an extra lap around the track. And they're looking at you like, well, they're mentality, I made the league, so I'm good. But then you have others, your LeBrons, your Michael Jordans, your Kobe's, who are like, I made the league, yes, but I'm going to keep working to win championships, Curry, those guys, because I want to win. My legacy wants to be different. So we're not saying that you eventually won't step yourself up. But if you're used to 3 days, start off with the 3 days that you would have practice with, or you'd be available anyway.
All right. So we're gonna keep the that consistent. Mm-hmm. What we're gonna do is we're gonna take a quick pause for the calls, and then we're gonna continue on down this thread. All right, y'all. So we talked about this, and this is something that we've discussed before regarding motivation, but this is kind of a different conversation, okay? Because initially, the conversation we had prior to this, and Coach Mo, you can remind me if I'm incorrect on this one. The conversation we've had before is a lot of our best athletes are self-motivated. That doesn't mean that they don't wake up on the wrong side of the bed some days, or some days they don't feel like phoning it in. So we're going to talk about, if you're the DIY coach and you're doing this at home, how can you help your kid that's self-motivated get the most of their time when they're kind of phoning it in? So what are some things that you've done, Coach Mo, an athlete that wants to get better but is just having a blah kind of day?
You got to be very careful too, and I'm glad you brought that up, is yes, some of my best athletes will have their days, the other moments. First of all, you got to remember that now that you're doing it yourself, you're taking them out of their regular gym space, or you're taking them away from their friends in a sense, because, you know, you may not be practicing like you were before. You might not be around the 10, 12 boys because of everything was going on health-wise. And so now it's just you and the athlete. And so maybe that kid's not a one-on-one kid, and they may feel that you're pressuring them a little bit because they never had that, you know. So you mm-hmm. got to kind of take a step back before you jump into making this elaborate plan, to realize it's just you and that athlete. You know, it might be dad and mom, or it might be grandpa doing it, maybe aunt, it may be big brother. So, and we all have different relationships with family members. So if they already have a kind of a strained relationship where it's like brother and sister fight, like my kids do, maybe sister might not be the best trainer, right? You know, for the younger brother, because they're going to end up fighting and you're not getting a lot out of it. So you just got to realize what is going on with that kid. So personalities could clash during this, and so you got to be very careful. Also, realize that it's a shock initially if everything just gets kind of shut down and the kid may be in a little bit of a shock. And that kid could be a great athlete already, but again, don't ramp it up to the point where they don't like the sport or they won't like to train, and maybe get some feedback. And so one thing I started talking to my athlete, my house, great athlete, going to give you 100% effort all the time. He's 13. So we've had those conversations where I'm like, hey, it may shut down, and you'll look at me and it's like, well, we haven't done it. It didn't shut down yet. Well, I'm just kind of letting you know it may, you know, and what do you want to work on if it does, you know, and what do you not want to work on if it does? And so I'm having those conversations now. And if you got to do it yourself, have those conversations before you put a plan on paper or on a computer or any kind of app, because if they're telling you straight up, I'm not gonna do the 3 days I was doing. I don't want to train this way. You're not gonna force them into more days. You're really gonna burn that kid out. If they say they were only gonna do 3 days, and you want to jump and give them six, it's not gonna work.
Yep, and that's what we're talking about: driving past your destination.
Yep.
Understand where your passenger wants to get off, and be aware of that. And say, you know, this is what our stopping point is. And then you can hold them accountable to that stopping point. Say, listen, we agreed to these days. This is what we said we were going to do. And so now we just need to execute it. Understand this. The barrier that you run into as a parent who's coaching is you're still a parent. And, you know, some kids are able to compartmentalize. They're able to accept mom or dad in a coaching capacity, and then mom and dad in a parenting capacity. Some kids are not. And so the back talk that they will give you, they're still going to give you. it's the back talk they would never give their coaches, but they'll deliver to you. So you have to be aware of how you're going to adjust to that. handling that without it turning into a big blowout, because that can impact future training. If it turns, if every time you guys, every time you're directing the kids' training, it turns into a big, huge mom and dad versus kid argument, that's going to take away from that training. And so I do think that's where you have that honest conversation with the kid and saying, when we're out here doing the training, I'm not mom and dad, I'm your coach. And this even goes, here's the thing, because you know, we're talking about the DIY coaches. A lot of parents right now are being DIY teachers. They don't have the training to be teachers, but they have to step in and fill the role the best way they can. And so we're asking you to do what you're able to do. You know, and if you want to take a more active role, this is the thing you're going to have to do. Even if you never played a sport before, you ask for the coach's support. You know, these coaches, if they want their athletes to train while they're away from them, they won't shun you. They'll give you the drills that they want the kids to work on, or they'll give you some specific things that they want the kids to work on, and that's how you'll work. But have the conversation with your kids and let them know you have to separate between mom and dad is nagging me versus mom and dad is pushing me to be better. That makes sense?
Right. And at a certain age, and this is, you know, as we're doing it, you know, the DIY stuff, a certain age, they have to know that. They have to know that, and you got to prepare them for that. And that's another thing I would throw in there, too, is having, before the program starts and before you do everything, have the interview with them first. Have the interview with them first so you're not wasting your time. You know, wasting your time, and you don't have a future argument. We both have kids, and I have 3. Brian has 2, and they're different. They're all different, and so if I have this conversation with my oldest, the conversation with my middle will be completely different. The understanding will be different, and then my youngest will be different. And I have to realize if I'm going to do a per se workout for all of them, that my approach probably needs to be different based off of their personalities.
Right.
If that kid argues with me anyway about like making their band up in the morning, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna get a little pushback from this. So to say, usually this is a 3-day program, but you're gonna do 5 because I want you to stay busy, and there's no excuses that you're not. That approach is another thing. Also, while you're doing that approach, look at your body language as you're coaching. So if you're dribbling, you set up some dribbling stuff, and if you look frustrated, if your voice is raising, if you're per se yelling at the kid and you're getting upset, that kid may not be used to that. And the misconception with coaches, because I got a personal story about that, is all coaches yell. you know, and to me, that's the biggest cop out, because what that is, that's just a person that's trying to protect and coddle their child, you know. Now the coach is yelling, cursing your kid out and hitting him with a chair. Okay, that's a problem there. He's out of control, he can be removed. But sometimes, you know, coaches get a little upset when, I don't know, the player misses 5 layups in a row and they've been playing for 10 years, you know. And so the coach may tell himself there. So that made that kid used to a coach getting on the team and saying, hey guys, get better, their voice goes up. But if you're getting frustrated about individual dribbling drills and yelling and things like that, that kid may shut down right away. So you gotta watch, no matter what program you do, how you approach the program, and also what is gonna be your goals for that program. Are you just gonna tell that kid every day just to dribble? And be realistic, don't give him a 6th grader the goal of, if you don't make these dribbling drills, you're not going to play in a state championship game in high school. Yeah. That's not going to motivate a 6th grader. You're like, I'm used to practicing for my team 2 days a week. If I kind of like what we're doing here, I may go 3 and just baby step it in. But don't give them a goal of something that is not even obtainable for the next 6-7 years.
Right.
Say, hey, by the end of the week, if you add an extra dribbling day, you know, we may go to some shooting drills, you know, something different.
You know, and you hit the nail on the head. You don't want a Bobby Knight kind of freak out.
Right.
Over a 6th grader who can't figure out how to dribble with his left hand. That's not going to benefit anybody. The thing I'll throw out there is, This is the training in and of itself. The time, now you sat down, you've picked your area out, you got your equipment together, you have your time and scheduled it out and everything. Understand this, the training is neither a reward nor a consequence.
It's good.
It can't be a reward or a consequence because that's going to impact the way that the kid participates. Now, you can give rewards and you can give consequences for things they do within the training, but do not use the training as a weapon to try to get behaviors out, get good or bad, get good behaviors or eliminate bad behaviors with the kid. But understand, this is business as usual. You know, if you fail a test and then you go to basketball practice, the coach may have some stuff within the training that's a consequence for failing the test, but they're not saying, well, you just don't come to practice. Mm-hmm. Or there's no practice today for you because you were mouthy to the teacher. They may have a consequence internally. Like, say your son or daughter had a bad class in Zoom and they got a bunch of feedback from the teacher because they had their hood pulled over their head. This is something that's happened in our house. or, you know, the teacher gives the kid some feedback or shoots the parents an email and your 9-year-old son sends a little mad face emoji to the teacher in an email. And now you have to talk to the counselor.
That didn't happen.
Totally something that did not happen. Last Friday before last.
This is totally made up.
So, you're going to you can do what coaches do where they build a consequence into the training. But that doesn't mean that the whole training completely shifts and it turns into this grueling, boring kind of thing. Nor do you say, well, since you screwed up in class, there's no training for you.
Right.
Understand this. This is the business part of it. You have to continue on. You have to keep on keeping on. And so if we're talking about consistency, you got to be consistent with the training. It can't be, oh, well, you were bad, and so you don't get to train, or you were bad, and so now the whole training is a big hour-long punishment session.
Right. And another thing, and I don't know how you feel about this, is don't be so hard on yourself and try not to be the expert. If you're doing it yourself and you're helping, you're trying your best, but don't get to the point where since you didn't get everything in on your initial plan today, that you take it out and make them go double the next day,
right?
Because you're trying to make the kid, you know, like you. And I remember when I first started doing this, and sometimes I ask feedback from my oldest just to make sure that I still got it. I fell off, you know. I'd be like, hey, was that practice okay? Do you think it was too hard for everybody, or you know, and you know, and he's our kind of our quiet one, unless he's playing Fortnite or NBA 2K, you know, or quiet one. And he finally said something to me this year, and he's like, man, I've got to where I'm doing really well, and I'm learning. He's like, so something's working. You know, and I'm like, you know what, you're right. So I have to stop doing that. So think about this when you're doing it yourself. Don't, your kid or whoever you're training probably is not expecting you to be this NBA trainer that's going to teach them how to do every one of Kyrie's dribbles overnight, and it sticks within 10 minutes, and all of a sudden this kid has 20 offers overnight. And that, your kid's not expecting that. Your kid is initially shocked that school's going to be out, and it's like, okay, I now have to train, and I still like basketball, and now how's it going to look? It's different. And you're trying to get them to buy into, yes, you don't have your 10 other teammates, but we can still do some skill work to keep us sharp. Just when that phone call comes and we're ready to get back on the court, we're ready to go.
And as a byproduct of the information age, it's really easy to overdo it. Like, you know, you can go online and find 1,000 trainings and all this other stuff, but you can overload yourself with knowledge and add too many seasonings to the mix and end up ruining the flavor of the training for everybody. So be aware of that. Use the people that you know in your network as a resource. Talk to your children's coaches. Ask them for things that they can do at home, and that's your starting point. We have designed our program to kind of mimic how Coach Mo would train his kids in a basketball context. And so that's another tool or resource that's available. But the first thing is you need to talk to your children's coach. Ask them, what are some drills they can be working on? I know we're shutting things down. What are some things I can have them do at home? And the coach will gladly give you some things that they could work on at home. So we're going to take a quick pause for the cause, and we will be right back. All right, y'all, we're back. So the thing is, the bottom line of the previous segment is, I'll put it to you like this. Just because you get a parking ticket doesn't mean that you're disallowed from going to work the next day. You still got to go out and handle business. All right? Your job is, you go out and do your job regardless of what other things are going on in your world. And that's really how you got to approach the training with the kids. You know, it's something that's got to be done. And it can't be contingent on, you know, you had a great day, so we're going to take it easy in practice today. Or, you know, you got an A on the test, so we're just going to skip practice for the day. You know, save those times where you're going to cut back on the training for they had a great game, or there's a game tomorrow and you want them to get the rest in. And so you, instead of practices, you may, instead of going out and doing the drills and the training, you may talk, talk some X's and O's stuff with them, or, you know, give them the stuff that coach told you to talk to them about. But we're saying, basically divorce those good and bad consequences from the training and be consistent with it. That is the biggest thing. You don't want to try to remove a kid from being able to train because they were acting like a jerk in class. That's just not how that works. So we got the equipment. We got the plan. Your training now. All right, Coach Mo, how do you do goal setting?
Uh-huh. So goal setting is, and that's within that conversation too you're having where you're kind of seeing where you're at. So if your kid is on the JV team at their school, they probably should have some goals. I know we try to set goals for our kids. When they set themselves and we ask them, you know, like, you know, you need to increase your rebounds by 2 extra each game. You need to increase your steals by the, you know. Mm-hmm. And so they should have this information from the coach that already have, or their select coach or their Y coach, where it's usually a same conversation. Brian, you've been around mm-hmm. some of our team, and you can come within the first few minutes, and you can. The first question you ask is so and so, are they rebounding better than they did the last tournament?
Right.
You know, are they, you know, is the kid actually running this tournament down the court and catching up with everybody else? So some things that these things are going to be known, and that's how you kind of goal set. Like, hey, we know you struggle in this area, and when everything stopped or everything was going on, we're only averaging 2 rebounds a game. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do some agility stuff. We'll do jump ropes, and we'll do X amount of jumping jacks to see if you can jump higher and blah, blah, blah. And so we're going to now work on your rebounding, and hopefully you're averaging 4 to 5 rebounds a game. So you goal set based on something that they're already know that they need to work on, but you hold them accountable for it. And you might let them know, just because you may not be on the court with your friends playing, you know, all the time, you still don't need, you still can't take a break. And you did not forget that was something you needed to work on. That goal is not accomplished yet. You have to be consistently doing it. And we have with some of our athletes where they have a great skill set. And I know a lot of these athletes, and this is gonna rub somebody wrong or other way. A lot of people are like, well, Coach Mo, how come I didn't get a bouncy shirt? Or how come I didn't get a hustle shirt? How come I'm like, because you consistently did something for 2 games, and you consistently broke it for 3 games. You know, you went back, and so you didn't meet that goal. You didn't meet that goal. You got in the neighborhood, but you didn't pull in the driveway.
Right.
That's exactly what it is. So you kind of base it off of what you're going on, what you've seen. If you've went to the games, you're like, you're walking down the court. Man, let's try to increase your speed a little bit, you know?
And here's the thing. This is why we talk about the importance of interacting with those coaches. If the coach has the expectation that your kid needs to learn how to play in the post. But your kid decides while you're working on the training, they're going to do nothing but they want to work on their three-point shot. You got a mismatch there. And the kid's goals don't align with the coach's goals. And the reality of it is, if you're playing a team sport, the coach's goals are the ones that matter. And so sometimes you're going to have to be the bad guy on that front and say, okay, we'll negotiate this. We can work. I need you to work on your post moves because that's what coach asked you to do. And these are the drills that he gave you, he or she gave you to work on. We do that. And then now we can, then once we get working on those and we get those drills knocked out, then we'll sit down and practice your three-point shoot. We'll practice your long-distance shooting because that's what you want to do.
Yeah, and most coaches will, if you send an email, they will respond to you. And you can ask. I don't know why kids don't do this more. Mm-hmm. And they'll be honest with you. Maybe they don't want the real. And right. They'll be like, hey, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, he has five things to work on, and they're this because of this. It's an easy email. If a coach mm-hmm. really invested in that kid, they'll send that.
So, I know we're sounding like a broken record, but it does circle back to having good lines of communication with the coach and working on what the coach wants you to work on distance. Like I said, you know, we played the clip last week. You know, the Patrick Ewan, do you work on that shot? What kind of shot is that? Those are the bad reps we were talking about on a previous episode where you're getting bad reps. You want to make sure that the training you have with your kids is full of good reps. And then you know, once you get the business part, then you allow them to work on the things that they want to work on. Mm-hmm. But you got to make sure that you are taking control and knocking out the goals as they stand. And I mean, I know this sounds, it's going to sound trite and people have heard it before, but write them down.
Yes.
Take some time and write out what the goals are, whether you have a big whiteboard or you have a notebook. Write down what the goal is so that you guys have a visual record of what you're trying to do. That's important. You know, it's as important as not having the Bobby Knight freakouts on a sixth grader because he or she can't dribble with their left hand. you want to make sure that you have those goals written out so that you can always circle back to them. If you ever get lost in the weeds, you can all, you know, where to circle, the point where you can circle back to and get the outcomes you're looking for. So, that's what we're talking about. Making sure that the training matches what the coach's expectations are. Because at the end of the day, you know, like I said, the kids are going to want to do the flashy stuff. They're not going to want to do the boring stuff. You kind of have to almost, in some cases, because there are a lot of kids that don't want to do the fundamental stuff. And that's really the most important thing is nailing those fundamentals and getting a mastery of those. If you're doing the DIY coaching, you're going to have to be the bad guy sometimes and keep them on task. All right. So I'll ask this, Coach Mo. What if you got more than one athlete that you're training? You got siblings and they're both training. How does a parent first manage their attention between the two kids and also make sure that the training time that they spend is valuable for both kids involved?
Different kids, different goals. And you establish that with them even before you start. You tell them, like, it's, you know, Bobby is now in 10th grade mm-hmm. and he's trying to be on the JV of Rochester High School. His sister Sally is in 2nd grade and she's just trying to kind of find her way. So you just kind of make the program or the conversation to match what you're trying to get out of that athlete, and to be honest, and if they're not the same caliber athlete, or right. just, you know, do not do the same program at all. Don't be cookie cutter with it. Don't make them do something that your advanced player would do today because you want them to catch up. Because I have a lot of parents who are like, well, I used to have my kid go with the neighbor kid, and yeah, the neighbor kid was 4 years older and he played varsity and 10 times bigger, and I'm like, well, the bad thing about the good thing is maybe it makes them step up and play bigger competition, but sometimes it's too big of a gap. The bad thing is they get burnt out because they can't understand why that kid is so much more advanced and they want to stop. Right. And so you got to be very careful about you know, doing that and being strategic. So different times, set different goals, do different things if it works for those kids.
Yep. And we talked about it. Don't try to handcuff the kid that's competitive to the kid that's recreational. If you have two kids that are playing at different levels, make sure that your training matches. And then you're having the conversation with the kids. Here's the thing. Sameness is not fairness. And that goes back to my old days at a childcare organization that we won't mention. But treating everybody the same doesn't mean it's always fair. And so your kid that's playing at a competitive level might get more one-on-one, FaceTime, more work, DIY coaching with you than your other kid who just plays recreational ball. So you may have a 30-minute session with the recreational ball kid, depending on what their goals are, but you might have an hour-long session with the kid that is playing competitive. That's just because you want to make sure that that training matches the level that they're playing at. If they're playing competitively, that means there's an increased demand on different skills they're going to need, and so that's going to require more of a time commitment than a kid that's just playing recreationally at the Y and is just trying to win a title at the Y. Now, we're not saying that competitive drives are any different. We're not saying the desire to win is any different. We're saying that it's a different set of skills that they're going to need to have success at those different levels. And so it may take a little bit more time. But trying to handcuff Mr. Recreational to Miss Competitive is not the move. It's not the move.
Nope.
And you're going to create a situation with those two kids where they're at each other's throat. They feel like they're competing for your attention. And one of them is not going to, they're not going to enjoy the time that they're doing training. And we're not saying it has to be all fun, but if they start to actively hate the training, now you got a different problem on your hands, because now you have a kid that is disconnected from the sport and you're forcing it down their throat. So tailor your approaches to where your kids want to be.
Yep.
Just because this kid is playing at playing like they're going to go to play college ball does not mean that her brother needs to be trained the same way, because the brother may be on a different path. So be aware of that, guys, is what I'm saying. You're running a real danger. Just because kids are related doesn't mean that they train or receive training or coaching. It doesn't mean that they receive it the same way, is what I'm saying. They may not have the same response to it.
Absolutely not. Yeah, all kids are different. All athletes are different. Even if somebody says your game is similar to so-and-so, it doesn't matter. I'm different from the next athlete.
So that's what we wanted to get into. Do we have anything else, Coach Mo?
No, I think we're, you know, the importance of is getting right on this, and being proactive in preparing this, having this conversation that more than likely is going to happen. And you do it for future. Maybe it doesn't happen for a week, maybe it happens for a month, but it may and probably will happen. But you start having the conversations now about this stuff. Yeah. So this conversation can happen. You can start planning stuff, and you can start getting, you know, equipment you need to, and you can, you know, we have a tool that we can help with that as well. A really, really nice tool,
right?
That you know we keep talking about, and it's coming, and it's gonna change the way we do things. But it's, you know, I just know that we got some good stuff coming up, and it's gonna help you in this and. These conversations, the reason we brought it up, these conversations are already happening with athletes and parents, and we're just trying to guide and help. And I think that's one thing we do at CMA is we try to, you know, stay in front of everything and not get caught, you know, not get caught while things are going on, and just try to game plan from there.
Yep, and that's what the episode was about today. Seriously, we want you guys to start thinking that at some point in time, even if it's for a week or two, you're going to have to take over the coaching part of it when they shut things down. Be prepared for it to happen. We're not saying it's a guaranteed, but you rather be prepared for it to happen so that you can do things on your own and keep your kid caught up with the rest of his peers. You know, last thing you want to do is a shutdown, and next thing you know, your daughter isn't playing at a varsity level anymore where she was before the shutdown. So, you know, I don't, you know, I think they'll go back, they'll possibly go back to the distance stuff where they still have games, but there's no practices because the facilities aren't shut. The facilities aren't allowing the kids to come into practice or just letting them show up to games. That is very, that is likely and has happened before. So we want you guys to be thinking on that wavelength. We're building the tool. We're testing it out. Reach out to us and let us know if you want access to it. Be watching our social media accounts. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. Coach Mo Athletics. Across the board, you can find us there. That's what we have for this week. This, I think this episode might be a little bit short, but that's okay. Because we got some stuff we want to... We got me and Mo have a couple of things we want to work on for the platform so that we can nail it down and really make sure that you have a solid experience. So
yeah, and this, I gotta say, it's one of... I mean, all of them have been great, but we, I think we get better. I think we get better. We just want to get this information out here. And to this, you know, with 2020 going on, we... I don't know if we can thank you guys enough. The people that have stuck with us, our CMA family, our basketball players, our total athlete trainers, our tryout prep trainer, our online kids and parents that have done our stuff. We thank you for the support, and we're just going to let you know right now, keep sticking with us because it's only going to get better. It's only going to get better. We have some good stuff, so we appreciate the support. We just got some big things coming up. Also, big shout out to our high school kids who right. in class A that are going to start tonight. We hope they stay safe, with the rules here in Nebraska, that they stay safe, they're able to play, and get through the season as best as possible. But these kids have earned it. We shout out to the kids that did our child prep. That did our stuff, that made their teams, that are going to be not only on their teams, but contributing and starting and doing things. And that's a big, huge accomplishment. And also shout out to the kids that who aren't able to play because of everything going on, because they're school districts and not, like, that keep working. I'm still getting videos, I'm still seeing things, and the kids still working, doing some of our workouts. That's fascinating because it's going to come back.
Right.
But it's going to be forever different, I think. And I think it's, you know, it's going to be good. But I appreciate the kids to keep doing it. Also, one thing I challenge people to do is make sure you're sending us some messages. I know people watch and they listen to this, but ask us questions. Just challenge, you know, don't be afraid to ask us questions. Like us on Twitter, like us on Instagram. Interact with us, try to find out what we do, and ask questions. And we appreciate the messages we've got for some of the stuff coming up, and the people that did message us about the online training, that want to, you know, try it out, those things there. We're going to get your information, and we're going to get in touch with you. So we did see your messages, so we appreciate that, and we're going to get back in touch with you guys.
So that's what we got. Tune in next week. We'll have another topic for you, but until next week, it's Brian and Coach Mo. We'll talk to you guys later.
Peace.
Peace.